1. Introduction. A prominent thread in Asian thought, found in such traditions as the Advaita Vedanta and Zen Buddhism, is that our everyday human experience has the character of a dream. The dream is that you are merely a person, a thing in the world bounded by your skin, a self that is separate from things and other people. A modern presentation of this theme is the movie The Matrix, in which Neo is not sure if the world is real or merely a dream. While it turns out that Neo also has a body in the real world, this was certainly not guaranteed. If you were merely dreaming that you were in this body, would you, like Neo, be daring enough to awake and see yourself as you really are? Here, I will focus on awakening in Chinese Zen Buddhism, or Chan. The raison d'être of Zen is to see through the delusion of being a bounded, separate thing and to fully actualize this awakening in one's everyday life. Having said this, it is important to qualify that one does not intentionally strive for awakening in one's Zen practice. Rather, the practice itself is the goal. This self-realization is referred to as kensho, which literally means seeing one's true nature. I interpret true nature as meaning the same as essential or intrinsic nature. Combined with the Buddhist doctrine that you have no essential or intrinsic nature at all, kensho would be a seeing that you are essentially empty of separate self-existence. Bodhi translates as awakening, and Buddha as awakened. I use the term awakening here in the narrow sense of kensho. I avoid the terms enlightenment and enlightened due to their association with a final, permanent state and morally perfect individuals. Unfortunately, as we know from experience, there have been a significant number of so-called enlightened masters in Western Buddhist centers engaging in sexual misconduct. For those who have faith in enlightenment, this is an uncomfortable mystery. There were also many purportedly enlightened Japanese Zen masters who fought in World War II and used their Zen training to kill more effectively. A kensho experience, by contrast, does not require being morally good, nor is virtuousness an inevitable outcome of the experience. Seeing one's identity with others is the basis for true compassion, but integrating this and other insights into everyday life is the unending work of a lifetime. Awakening is a transformation in how one experiences oneself and the world. While kensho is unique to every individual, two main indivisible aspects can be identified. The first aspect is seeing that the nature of oneself or mind is empty or void. Shen Hui, a student of Hui Neng, stated, "Seeing into one's self-nature is seeing into nothingness. Seeing into nothingness is true and eternal seeing." The second aspect is the erasing of the usual, though merely apparent, boundary between subject and object. Huang Po described it as a perception, sudden as blinking, that subject and object are one. How exactly does one see their true nature? Douglas Harding developed a method of self-inquiry, the headless way, that can be considered a modern method of awakening. The method uses apparatus to orient attention to who or what you are in your own first-person experience. Hence, it may be referred to as a technology of awakening. The key to this method is noticing that you cannot see your own head. Rather than looking out of a head, visually speaking, there is just a gap here. this is perhaps the most overlooked spot in the world. References to headlessness are scattered throughout early Zen literature. When Zen master Chung'an was asked how the sages of old had obtained awakening, he replied by making a motion as if chopping off his own head. Although Tieshan had made considerable progress in his practice, Zen master Yang recommended the need for a good hammer strike to the back of his head. Harding describes his own vivid experience of headlessness in the Himalayas. What actually happened was something absurdly simple and unspectacular. Just for the moment, I stopped thinking. Reason and imagination and all mental chatter died down. For once, words really failed me. I forgot my name, my humanness, my thingness, all that could be called me or mine. Past and future dropped away. It was as if I had been born that instant, brand new, mindless, innocent of all memories. There existed only the now, that present moment and what was clearly given in it. To look was enough. And what I found was khaki trouser legs terminating downwards in a pair of brown shoes, khaki sleeves terminating sideways in a pair of pink hands, and a khaki shirt front terminating upwards in absolutely nothing whatever. Certainly not in a head. It took me no time at all to realize that this nothing, this hole where a head should have been, was no ordinary vacancy, no mere nothing. On the contrary, it was very much occupied. It was a vast emptiness, vastly filled, a nothing that found room for everything, room for grass, trees, shadowy distant hills, and far above them snow peaks like a row of angular clouds riding the blue sky. I had lost a head and gained a world. This is, of course, a phenomenological description. It is not the claim that the person Douglas Harding does not have a head. If attending here is a way of awakening, then this gap would be like a crack in the matrix, and hence it bears careful investigation. To explore this further, I will guide the reader through some first-person experiments pioneered by Douglas Harding. Although the methods are radically different to traditional meditation techniques, the results converge with descriptions of awakening from contemplative traditions. Here, I will focus on how they illuminate accounts of awakening in Chinese Zen and vice versa. As my main goal is to investigate the phenomenology of awakening rather than metaphysics, for the most part, I will be neutral about whether such experiences and the phenomenology explored here directly reveal reality. Although I use the term awakening throughout, this should be taken as short for awakening experience, and hence as neutral about the epistemological and metaphysical implications of the experience. I briefly present the case for the experience representing a genuine awakening in section 9.